directly related to the activities that you folks are involved in. I'm personally really excited about this, and this is something I'm hoping we can do some significant expansion in the state of Oregon, maybe even as early as this next biennium. So I'm going to start off with Mike Harris and Lisa Villarreal. If you guys could come on up and welcome. Glad you could be here. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
I'm Mike Harris.
And committee, we've been advised that you can break in with questions anytime. So we'll just proceed as how it goes. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you, Chairman Cruz, representatives, committee. I'm Mike Harris from Multnomah County. And joining me today is Lisa Villarreal from California. And has a very prominent role in California, and I'm very pleased that she could be here to share with you some of the information and successes that they've had in California with regard to community learning centers, as we're calling them, or community schools. And we're pleased to share this day at the legislature with you. I hope you've been able to come downstairs and see the many exhibits that are available for you, and meet the kids and see what's going on in the schools and before and after school programs. And we are very pleased to be here. Ms. Villarreal is a very prominent. Is very prominent nationally in the community schools effort. Being on national boards, and we've had an opportunity to benefit from her vast experience nationally, but certainly in terms of the what she's been able to pull together in the state of California, where she is director of the an early childhood Healthy Start program. You can help me with that. Okay.
It's the California Healthy Start State Field Office, as well as the California Center for Community School Partnerships, and we're based at the University of California at Davis.
With your permission, I'd like to ask her to share with you some of the information that she has accumulated from their successes in California, and perhaps that will add to our edification.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, representatives, it's an honor to be here today. And it's an honor to be here as an advocate for my friends in Oregon. As Michael has shared, I'm the director of the State Field Office for the California Healthy Start State Initiative and also the Center for Community School Partnerships at the University of California at Davis. I'm representing also the National Coalition of Community Schools today, as well as an organization called Family Support California, which is a branch of the National Family Support America organization. Our California State Healthy Start Initiative differs from the Oregon State Initiative, and it also differs from the federal initiative, and it's that one that I'd like to use as a focal point to share some of our results for children, youth, families, communities, and schools. The California State Initiative was passed in 1991 to provide seed money for schools and districts to create community school partnerships that would be family-focused, locally designed, results-oriented, building on strengths, and culturally appropriate. I'm proud today to be able to share some results that I know will be similar to the results that you will be able to achieve with your community school partnerships and your community learning centers that you are anticipating moving forward. In the first go-around of evaluations for our first set of community school partnerships in 1996, there were significant improvements in child well-being, quality of life, and family functioning, and those will be defined today as examples of a 50% reduction in the utilization of emergency rooms for non-emergency health care by Healthy Start and Community School Partnership families, a 50% reduction in the self-reported incidence of domestic violence, suicidal ideation, and severe depression among parents and children of our Community School Partnership parents, a 12% reduction in mobility rates among these same families, and a 6% increase in employment rates among employable children. And all of this information is available on the State of California Department of Education website under California Healthy Start. But in the beginning, there was some concern that there were only limited results in the area of improved academic achievement, only a 2 to 3% improvement in things like standardized test scores, grade point averages, and attendance rates in the first go-around. Our site folks told us that that was not the case, and they knew that there were greater results for children and families, especially in the area of academic achievement, and they admonished the state to take another look, a different look, at measuring the success of these children. In the second round of evaluations conducted in 1999 and published in 1999 in the year 2000, we found identical results in the area of child well-being, quality of life, and family functioning. But when we took a look at the lowest performing students, the 25th percentile and below scores in reading and math, we saw amazing improvement with that particular grouping of children. As much as a 50% improvement in math scores for children up through fourth grade, and a 25% improvement in reading scores, although I have to qualify this, if your child is scoring at the 20th percentile in math, a 50% improvement brings them up to the 30th percentile in math. We know that we still don't want our children scoring there. But to have that significant improvement in the course of 2 years' time provides a strong testimony to the power of community school partnerships, community learning centers, both school-based and community-based, and their value for, in effect, raising the bottom of academic achievement.
Thank you, Representative Morris Anderson.
With your mouth full, Representative Kurt, sorry. I have a question again to clarify. You said the 25%, what was the 25% of the children?
The lowest quartile.
Scored on achievement tests?
Our lowest performing students in achievement tests made the most significant gains after their participation and their families' participation in our community school partnership programs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm so pleased that you're here, and the outcomes are so important. Could you share with us a little bit? One of the issues that we've had in Oregon is tracking the youth or the children, because people are mobile, like you said, and so sometimes they do school-wide gains if a school has a particular community learning center, but then if the school population changes radically during the school year, it doesn't really reflect the impact of the center. So how do you, in a systematic way, follow that child and figure out whether they're improving or not?
In the California Healthy Start Initiative, we have been tracking the individual child at 3-month, 6-month, and 1-year increments, and there is a mandated annual evaluation report. Local attempts are made to continue to track the children across the city, across the county, but I have to say there are a variety of methods to do this, and there is not one state method that's in place right now that will track the students across the board, unless you go with the individual agency systems, the education system, social services, health. They all have their individual tracking system. So that remains a challenge for us. If it's across county, if it's across school district, it's generally not a problem, although in some of our school districts, everyone is completely online, and we have electronic communication gathering a variety of school data, and in other districts, it's still pencil and the Scantron form and the little Scantron machine every day. Mr. Chairman, shall I continue?
Yeah, please.
I would like to give you a picture of the activities in community learning centers. I'd like to give you a picture of the community school partnership programs that take place, and I'd like to give you a picture of the dedication and the hard work that goes on. Imagine, if you will, a board meeting with family advocates, coordinators, and providers at your community learning center. And at the school board meeting, the family advocates and coordinators have brought a group of parents and children to testify regarding the results that I've just captured for you. The results in terms of improved academic achievement, the results in terms of reduced mobility rates because families are choosing to stay in the attendance area of the school and continue to participate in the learning opportunities of the school because of all the variety of supports and services and opportunities that are offered there. And imagine, if you will, a coordinator leaving the school board meeting that night, taking the children and families home, stopping on the way to get a quick supper, and paying for it all out of their own pocket, knowing that they'll never get reimbursed, and later driving home that night in the rain, realizing that what they really need to be doing is saving up money to buy a new set of tires. Imagine, if you will, an advocate or a coordinator going to the local supermarket and requesting all of the overripe bananas because they're perfect to make banana bread. And banana bread is a perfect learning component of the after-school learning and snack portion of the after-school activities. Only to find at the school setting, perhaps the cafeteria says, "I'm sorry you can't use the kitchen. There's a problem with the health code." A custodian sneaks them in anyway and helps them do their activity. And as they clean up, they realize that the custodian's son is one of their very best customers. And so a bond is made. Imagine, if you will, family advocates and coordinators who at family gatherings find that they're having a hard time explaining exactly what they do. And people continue to ask them, "Why don't you get a real job?" Mm-hmm. But somehow none of that matters because they know that it's the kids that it's about, and it's the results for them. Realizing that they're working with the very same children and the very same families as public systems are across the city and across the county. Imagine, if you will, a high school senior who comes in with a water polo scholarship to the local university, and the joy on the family advocate's face, realizing how hard they had to work 4 years ago to arrange the usage of the community pool for a swimming program because the school that was a hub did not have a swimming pool. The results take time. Imagine, if you will, a father coming back to a learning center with a beautiful hand-carved leather belt, the finest from his home village in his country of origin, the village that he had to leave before the war tore the village apart. And imagine, if you will, that father saying, with gratitude, for the citizenship classes that he received at your community learning center, and being able to stand there and recite part of the inscription of our own Statue of Liberty, concluding with the words, "This is what I love about America. They give you hard work, they give you opportunity, and a chance to succeed." These are some of the success stories that our community learning centers and our school community partnerships have seen across the state of California, and that you are already seeing in the state of Oregon. I am convinced that the results that I captured in the early part of this presentation can be duplicated throughout the state of Oregon. In fact, are being duplicated right now, and as you unroll your plan for evaluation and data collection, you will see some similar results. I'd like to close, if I may, with a quote from the late Dr. Martin Luther King in his address. In his acceptance speech for the Nobel Peace Prize, this was delivered in December of 1964, and Dr. King said, "I have the audacity to believe that people everywhere can have 3 meals a day for their bodies, education and culture for their minds, and dignity and freedom for their spirits. Behind me are folks who have the audacity and the tenacity to make this work with piecemeal funding, soft money, local philanthropy, large philanthropy, very few institutionalized or general budgets supporting the work, and yet they continue to do it anyway. Our charge to you, of course, is to find a way to make this a reality throughout your wonderful state, because this is America's promise and because Oregon's children deserve it. Thank you so very much."
Representative Mona Sanderson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The funding for the California program comes from where?
It comes from the Department of Education. It's Prop 98 money, and it's general fund.
General fund.
And the funding for the California State Healthy Start Initiative is $39 million annually. We also have a California After School Safe Neighborhoods and Learning Partnerships grant, which is different than the federal 21st Century Community Learning Centers grant, and that was funded this last year at $85 million, and that is renewable money.
So there, how much is federal money, or is there any federal money?
The federal dollars come in our 21st Century Community Learning Center sites. And many of our sites are piecing together a California Healthy Start grant, a California After School grant, and a 21st Century Community Learning Center grant.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have cut out of our current budget, proposed budget, money that we currently use to fund these types of programs. Any suggestions for us about how we build political will to actually get the resources to fund these programs in an appropriate manner?
Representative Bowman, our sense in California is that we've been able to build political will by demonstrating strong results.
Mm-hmm.
And for folks whose concern may be more of a fiscal nature rather than the health, well-being, and welfare of children, there are fiscal savings involved in the avoidance of high-end services. We ask sites to take a look at the variety of supports and services that they could deliver, ranging from prevention and early intervention to high-end services. And we're able to demonstrate that these kinds of results that I shared earlier around improved quality of life, child well-being, and especially academic achievement pay off in significant dollars later on. When the California Healthy Start program was put together, we learned that in the state of California, our reading recovery program also did research around the incarceration rates in California and the reading rates of children who ended up being incarcerated adults, and we found some staggering information. One of them is that there were paid consultants whose job it was to determine the number of failing third graders in the state of California, because when they did their 10-year out projections for the number of prison beds that were needed, they knew that those numbers would match. And the reading recovery unit across the state was incensed. And that became part of the impetus to roll this out in as many ways as we could possibly do it.
So there was a Mr. Chair, if I may follow up. So there's a direct connection between the failure of reading rates in third grade and the new prisoners that we were putting into our institutions.
Based on the 10-year out projections, yes.
That's pretty scary.
And Representative Bowman, if I may add, we learned that there were high-paid consultants to determine these formulas in order to forecast the construction of necessary prison beds.
I think Texas uses the same formula.
I think they, yeah. Some would suggest so do we.
You use formulas that work?
No. We may get the same results. I don't think we project based on that formula. Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In California, do they use any of the Title I money for these initiatives? I know that in the federal reauthorization, I can't remember what year it was, there was a new emphasis on parent involvement for Title I funds. And I know in Oregon there are several places that actually tap quite a bit into Title I, but there are other places that say, well, you know, we're already using the money for this. We can't shift it over for these types of initiatives. And what advice might you give us in terms of how we look at that?
Representative Carlson, Title I funds are used and can be redirected. In fact, there was a federal waiver, Title 11, that allows all title funds for children to be examined and 5% to be redirected for the coordination of such services as community learning centers and community school partnerships. When we go into a Healthy Start site or a community school partnership, we strongly urge them to take a look at all of their title funding and take a look at all of the children and families that are being served, and we urge them to restructure it in a more effective way, utilizing existing aides and existing providers to have a more comprehensive and unified approach.
Representative Morissette.
Thank you. I'm not sure that the state of Oregon has kept track of the third grade reading failures to project number of beds, but I would love to see the copy of the California projection, because that would be the next best thing we could use. Obviously, your state is a leader, and we're not far behind. But I think that's the kind of data I think that people need to see, that there is that direct correlation. So is that available on the web, or is that somewhere else? Could you...
Representative Morissette, that information was collected by our state reading recovery program as an attempt to gain strong political will for the reading recovery program and for intense family literacy programs. I do not have the source. There is a magazine article that I might be able to find that was published in 1993 where the Reading Recovery State Group obtained this information. It might be available through the Board of Corrections, and I will follow up and see what I can do to find out if that process and that formula is still in place.
Our very able assistant Diane Lewis is taking copious notes, and so if you do find the information, Diane will be in touch with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mike, do you have some other folks who would like to come up here? Or? Don't be shy.
Mr. Chair, while she's coming up, if you haven't seen in your pile of papers, we've been trying to compile a list of all of the Family Resource Centers and Community Learning Centers in Oregon. And it is always an obsolete and incomplete list whenever we start the venture because things continue to change, as you know, which is why it's always a revised draft. But if you know of centers in your communities, we'd like to make sure the information's accurate, and also we wanted to give everyone a portrait of the number of good works that are going on around the state already.
Yeah, and committee, you also have hospitals 26, 28, and 2082, which speak to what Janet was just talking about, and at the appropriate time, this is going to be a large piece of our committee work, and in my opinion, one of the more significant things will be this session. So, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chairman Cruz, members of the committee, I'd like to introduce Kathy Turner, who is the director of the Sun Project in Multnomah County. And we have some experiences under our belt now that have shown how effective this project can be in terms of bringing together these variety of services from different agencies and from around the community. And I thought if Kathy could share a little bit of the results of our experience so far, this would be helpful.
Thank you, Mike. There's just a couple of things I wanted to say. First of all, I think the House Bill 2082 is very important. We already have a number of what I would call informal collaborations between human services employees, community justice, and education at our on the local level. But these are vulnerable to changes in management, and when we establish relationships that are profitable, I think profitable for children and families and also an excellent use of resources, personnel changes or directives change, and those informal relationships that have done such good work are taken apart and they have to be recreated, and that's not an efficient use of resources. So I am here to really support on behalf of the, right now there are 14 schools that are operating as community learning centers across Multnomah County who will really benefit from this, from establishing an official doorway for these collaborations. They do it unofficially and with great benefit. Lisa has talked about some of the benefits that they've seen in California. In a couple more years, I hope that we can come up with the same statistics. Some of the things that we are seeing already is we are seeing individual gains in terms of reading and math for both elementary and middle school students. All schools that are Sun schools in Multnomah County saw gains in their benchmarks last year, not just because they're Sun schools, but because they also have effective instructional leadership. And all of those schools were really targeting a thing we're interested in called the achievement gap, which is to make sure that all students benefit from these programs. And so I just really wanted to say that that is one of the things we're seeing. The principals and staff of those schools in part credit the fact that there are effective after-school homework clubs and instructional programs as part of these community learning centers that are benefiting those students and families. Another thing that has happened is that we have seen, in particularly in the school that Mike Harris was principal at, we've seen real changes in attendance and also behavior by the students. Chair Stein of Multnomah County says you must be present to learn, and we believe that that's true. And these programs have been very effective at changing that and also creating systems in the school where if children are having a hard time, either for health reasons or behavior reasons, maintaining, staying in the classroom, a different educational environment is created that keeps them in the school and keeps them learning with a smaller staff to student ratio so that the situation can be managed better. Those are a couple. Is there anything else you were thinking of, Mike? Okay. Those are a couple of the gains that we're seeing right away, that we're seeing. But in addition, we have a full-blown evaluation that will bring some other results, and I should be able by March to bring those to you as well. Thank you.
Representative Mona Sanderson.
Kathy Statesfoot.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to say that Gresham Barlow has some Sun Schools, and I wanted to share with the rest of the committee and the audience how valuable it is. And what's unique is, first of all, you have to get a principal who gets on board. And that, I think, is one of the hardest things. If you don't have a principal who's 100% behind the project, it's going to fail. But once you get the principal on board, and that's why, then the principal has wide latitude as to the variety of programs that can be invested developed in the school. Because as we all know, a school in maybe in Joanne's Representative Bowman's district is very different from one that would might be in Eastern Oregon, whatever. And so that's what's so nice about these community learning centers, because there's a lot of local control as to what kinds of activities can be offered in the individual schools or community learning centers if it isn't in a school.
Thank you, and thank you. We have an excellent principal that we work with in Gresham Barlow, Alice Black, and she's there at Clear Creek Middle School. Thank you.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to know if you've had an opportunity to review the governor's budget, because clearly some of the flexibility we've had in being able to put Sun Schools together and do some of the other community resource building has been eliminated based on the current budget that's sitting in front of us. So I would be curious as to what you see. I mean, even with the ideal model we have in place, all of a sudden, we're not going to have the flexibility to put money where it's needed in local communities. The money that's coming from the state is going to be very specifically targeted to specific populations. Have you had an opportunity to evaluate what we lose based on what's currently in front of us as far as both of the budgets are concerned, the co-chair's budget as well as the governor's budget? Have you had an opportunity to look at it and see what pieces we will not be able to provide because of the change in direction of where our funding will be going?
I don't have exhaustive knowledge on this. However, it's clear that there will be cuts in health services that will affect families, both through community health and teen health centers. It's clear that the community justice activities that have been preventative, especially during the teen years, are being cut back, and those are currently our partners. I actually look forward to broader early childhood programs, because that will help us link with the younger kids. But it seems that there has been an exchange on that level. And I recognize that resources are limited, but it's a false economy.
Mr. Chair, if I might add, I'm sorry, I didn't get your name. What was it?
Lisa Villarreal.
Mr. Chair, if I may ask Lisa another question, please. In California, when you started developing this model, I'm always concerned, you know, we go one way or the other. You know, we either say we're gonna address teenagers that are at risk, or we're going to do the warm and fuzzy with the 0 to 7-year-olds. When you were developing your program, are you talking about a continuum of services throughout the ages for young people, or is this focused on early childhood or on another population?
Representative Bowman, the focus is children K through 12 and their families.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear you. So would you say that again, please?
Children K through 12 and their families.
Thank you.
For the record.
I didn't hear it the first time. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Representative Morsat, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to recognize Gloria Griffith, who just Gloria, stand up, please. Who just walked through the door. I'm representative from Springfield, and Gloria is a coordinator of the Springfield Marcola Family Resource Center, and we've been in existence for, I think, 6 years now. And it takes a principal who really believes in the program to make it happen at the school level. But there is a frustration in dealing sometimes with the administration when we're talking about availability of buildings, and I think the public has to understand that these are public buildings, and it goes beyond the, you know, the school board is the custodian of them, but I think we have to make them more accessible at the district level. The other problem is funding sources. Now, I would like to see the beer, wine tax, an increase, go toward prevention, which would include some of the programs that you're talking about, and I'm going to make that effort. We have the lowest beer wine tax, I think, in the country, or near the lowest, and resources are important, and there is a direct relationship between early alcohol abuse, like, you know, middle school or lower, and dropout rate and all of the other problems that come along with that. So we need to look for ways to make this happen this time, and our general fund is probably tapped out as far as additional monies, but there are some other ways we might do this, but you can sit down now, Gloria.
Wow, what power is that?
Okay, any other questions? Thank you very much. I think I'll call up a whole new panel of folks and let you guys get off the hot seat. Debbie Cantiello and Peggy Perkerson, Diana Cox, and Susan Dillon.
Yes, and Mr. Chair?
And Kathleen Hines.
She can be next. Oh. Mr. Chair, this is a group that actually has been working with the legislature since 1997. If you recall, we passed House Bill 2009 out of the Children and Families Committee in 97, and then Senate Bill 555 picked them up in 99, and I'd be interested in hearing about how those dollars have impacted their center, the impact of the cuts in the governor's budget on their centers, and there was an evaluation that was mandated as part of 555 and how that's going for them.
So. I vaguely remember those legislative pieces. welcome.
Thank you.
The floor is yours.
Representative Cruz, fellow representatives, or Chair Cruz, I'm sorry. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you and for your consideration of our projects. My name is Debbie Cantiello, and I'm the Executive Director of Coalition for Kids, which operates a family resource center in Grants Pass, Oregon. We are proud to have just celebrated our 10th anniversary. So in terms of speaking to sustainability, we started with no state funding, no federal funding at all, and I believe had made a really strong statement to community-based support. In fact, our project is located in an abandoned 25,000 old school district building that originally had significant amount of asbestos in it, and the community was able to pull together and decide to make this nightmare more of an asset to the community. We co-locate 14 different agencies in our facility, all of them providing services to children and family. Our care, not wanting to sound stereotypical here, but our target population is prenatal to grave. We have programs that run that full gamut of services. We have many programs that are private nonprofits with little or no state funding. As Representative Carlson brought up, we've been the subject of three state evaluations, and I know Representative Bowman unfortunately had to leave the room, but she makes a strong case for the local control of dollars. I was able to sit in on a review of the governor's budget that he gave to the staff, And although I compliment him with his prevention dollars, it is frustrating for me to sit in Josephine County where I know that we have crossed some of these service integration bridges, collaboration, all the buzzwords, and where we've been doing this quite successfully for many years. And I do in fact feel that we are trying to reinvent something that the state has invested some dollars in. The evaluation component is very strong, that we are attaining state goals, statewide benchmarks, and that we are doing everything we set out to do. I would like to bring up a case in point for us that I think speaks strongly to local control of dollars. I don't mean to come to you with an emotional appeal, but I think sometimes you have to see the value of the state money firsthand. Our local community development corporation folded due to financial insolvency a couple years back. And they were running a program at Harbeck Village, which is a low-income housing site in Grants Pass, Oregon. And it had strong community-based support, and this was a care for children, kindergarten and up, and it was after-school program based on-site. The children, huge transportation problem in Grants Pass. And this after-school program was really a key thing. The Community Development Corporation, knowing they could not continue to run the program, contacted us, and my board of directors was able to evaluate it and commit some of our unrestricted revenue to that project. We later wrote grants to the Cow Creek Seven Feathers Foundation, which has been our funder for this project for 3 consecutive years, which I think is a very powerful statement that they believe in this. Unfortunately, this is all soft money. Last year, November, we had a young man come out to the project, and please remember that most of these children have multiple risk factors. Every one of them is at or below the federal poverty rate, or they would not be living there. Most of them are from single-parent households. Many of them are being raised by their grandparents, aunts, or uncles, which is at epidemic proportion in Josephine County right now. This child came to the project, and he went to the director, whose name is Michael, and he was very frustrated. He'd come home from school, and a second grader, and this is the same age my son is, so this is a very compelling story for me, and he was overwhelmed because he did his writing messy that day, and the teacher sent him home with his entire homework pack, his spelling, his math, everything, plus he had to rewrite this project. His mother had him as a teen parent. She is all of 22 years old right now. He was there, she was at work, we were supervising the child. He said, it is absolutely hopeless. That's what this child came there that day with. Michael, who's our director, was able to call out to the main building, and I have multiple child care staff. We also run the largest licensed child care in Josephine County. We were able to send another staff person out. He sent the kid out with a snack to go play basketball for a little while, because we all need a little balance every now and then, brought him back in, but most importantly, he picked up the telephone and he advocated for this child. He made one phone call to the teacher and he said, this is too much work for one night for this second grader. I need approval to split this. I mean, that's all it took to make a difference in this kid's life was this one phone call. They got the homework done over 2 days. And so I guess what I would contend to you guys is what we're really, in many cases, giving children is hope where it was hopeless. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You brought up an interesting point, and you mentioned so it was a little boy that you were talking about.
Yes,
correct?
It was.
I just wanted to make sure I heard that correctly. Over the last, it was a few months ago, I read a book, and it's called The War Against Boys. And it has to do with teachers and others that tend to be harder on boys than they are on girls, or maybe they're just hard on both boys and girls. I don't know. But one of the things that is pointed out in this book, though, is that some of the Russonian kind of feel-good types of activities that have occurred in our schools over the last 30 years has really led to a failure of our youth in a lot of respects. Do you see that very much it just kind of caught my ear when you were talking about this little boy and you know that the teacher had just loaded up all this stuff on him without any, you know, and it seemed like a pretty trite reason. I mean, his handwriting was messy that day.
And I think that, you know, so yeah, a person went to advocate. Now, if nobody would have advocated for that little boy, what would have been the next step? Would it then have been, you know, well, you didn't get it done and your writing was messy and yada, 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 and pretty soon now the next day he's piled on with more? So I guess, do you, how much do you see that in the learning centers?
Chair Cruz, Representative Crummell, we in Grants Pass, Oregon, are pretty familiar with the report, The Face of Fatherlessness, and that certainly is prevailing in our community. So for this child, the only positive male role model in his life is, in fact, my kids' club director, and he is the person that advocated for the child. I certainly think, and again, we are stereotyping slightly, I know in my son's case that sitting down and writing neat is not typically his priority, and it is not
for most boys.
Right, not something that most boys excel at. And I think you're bringing up a great point. I went to first grade with my son. Every now and again, I'll take a day off work and just spend a day in school with my children. And my daughter is significantly older than my son. She's in eighth grade now. And I watched the way the boys were treated by the teacher. And obviously, I'm sure this is not the case for all teachers. But she did, in fact, seem to be more frustrated with the energy level of the boys. And I suspect when you're trying to keep them seated, that your high-energy children, whether they be boys or girls, would be a little bit more difficult for the teacher. I believe that these after-school programs and follow-up homework is no longer optional for these children. If they're going to keep pace, it is an expected requirement of that day. And we are putting any child at a severe disadvantage if we don't give them some structured after-school support in their homework, whether it's through the school districts, family resource centers, parent involvement. And I'd love to say the parents should do it, but they're not always there.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Ms. Cantiello? What you have done and what you're continuing to is extremely impressive, and as I look at this handout, all of the resources that are available to families in this one center is just incredible. And I think following up on Representative Bowman's questions and Representative Mona Sanderson's questions regarding funding, it's interesting you said that you started out this program with no state or federal funds, and I'm not sure what Cow Creek Feathers, what is that?
Chair Cruz, and I'm sorry,
Tone,
Representative Tone, thanks. We couldn't see around the corner. Cow Creek Seven Feathers Foundation is the gaming reservation that was established at exit 100 or 99 Canyonville, right where it snows when you're coming through the pass.
Right.
And they, as a new foundation, they, in their guidelines, said that they would only fund a program one time because they're so new. They want to spread their diversity, and their board has just been absolutely thrilled with our project, and I think for them to fund it three times, understanding this is soft money and every year we're at risk, but I think it's compelling that they would continue to provide for the program.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to get some.
I was just going to point out that general fund money would be soft money too.
Chair Cruz, we're learning that.
Well, colleagues, several of us have things at once, so we can hold the questions because we will be talking to these folks again, probably in a month. So I'd just like some other a little bit more.
I just want to introduce myself. I'm Peggy Perkerson. I'm the director of a family resource center in Harrisburg. And we were part of the state evaluation of the last legislative session and are under the evaluation from Senate Bill 555. We've been there for 3 years and have greatly impacted this small little community at the southern end of Linn County, which we have no access to Lane County because the bridge is out, which I have been assured is going to be back up within the next 24 hours.
I just discovered that yesterday.
It's impacted several of our families and the school district in general. I'm trying to get across the river. One of the things that I've really noticed, and this is the second family resource center that I've started up. I was part of the Lane County chain of family resource centers 2 years prior to that, is just the impact of coming into a community that has absolutely, really nothing. They only have the school, and they were in danger of losing their Medicare reimbursement dollars from their DHS project because the school was just and a lot of transition. And so the Family Resource Center, because we had that structure and that collaboration partnership already there, we were able to step in and say that we would be the fiscal agent for this funding. And so that has stayed there, and we're really grateful for that, because there's just nothing in Harrisburg at all. We kind of serve as the parent education. We run the only preschool there, which serves at least 20 families a year. And I've had a whole bunch of letters of support, but I didn't know we were going to speak, so this is totally off the cuff. And so I will probably visit your offices later and drop some things off. But we have built a lot of partnerships, a lot of collaborations, and made a lot of impact. And I can definitely speak to the middle school boys. I never thought, even though I've raised two sons who are now in college, that I would really enjoy middle school boys. They come to my after school. We are open after school just as a drop-in with computers and internet access and different kinds of games and homework help. And I have really enjoyed them a lot. I've gotten a first name base with probably half the sixth to the eighth graders. And I had one eighth grade boy come to me the other day and just said, "You're probably one of the neatest adults I've ever met." And that's coming from a 13-year-old that asks when I'm going to be there and when I'm going to work. And building that relationship has really helped, because they talk to me about their problems. And I think that having that adult in their life when they're going through a stressful time, especially there's several of the kids that I know they're going through divorces, and their parents rely on us to be there because now mom is working. Having a safe place that they know that they're going to be after school, and we're in a small enough town to where we know all the kids and they know us, is really important for us. And it's just been a really growth thing in 3 years. We have just done so much, and I wasn't prepared to come and do this, so I didn't bring any of my stuff with me, so I will shut up. Thank you, Chairman Cruz and representatives.
Chair Cruz, representatives, I'm not prepared either, so I'll just share a little about our family center in Christmas Valley. And if you don't know where Christmas Valley is, it's in Lake County, a very isolated rural community that's 100 miles, for example, from the nearest Safeway or bank or dentist.
I've been there.
Have you been there? Well, stop by. Next time you're in Lake County, please come by Christmas Valley. So what my center has evolved into, and it's always an evolution, the hub of the community, we provide access to services that were not there before. They were never there. And some were, you know, state-mandated services, but they were sporadic and part-time. And now there's a place that's open every day. Well, not Saturday and Sunday, unless it's a holiday like 4th of July, and then we're always there participating in community activities. So we're there 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. The community can come and find out what services are available, and if they're not, how to get them. You know, the information and referral piece of what we do is so important. People didn't know where to get this information, or they would have had to drive 100 miles, let's say, to the courthouse, which is 100 miles away, the county seat. So we have we managed to bring services in that weren't there, and it's a struggle. It's difficult to establish and maintain partnerships, but that's what we work most at. We have the non-stigma issue that we've found a way around stigma when we're providing services to different people. I sell hunting and fishing licenses, as well as we have an AFS caseworker there one day a week, which we're working on. We're trying to raise that level of service for the case management piece, but I won't go into that. That's between me and DHS. anyway, so that's just a little, I guess, description of this is an extremely rural community where if our center wasn't there, these basic services, as well as some of the other activities we do provide for the community, I mean, just wouldn't be there. I hate to number the partners, but I'm going to say last count, well, when we did our 990s, we had 19 active partners that ranged from local community groups, other 501c3s, to the school, the ESD, AFS, the Commission on Children and Families. So it's quite a, and it's a very small building. And if you've been to Christmas Valley, you know we don't have a lot of buildings.
Well, I've seen your building.
Have you seen
it? Yes, I have.
Wow, I'm sorry I missed
you. I had it all described to me, what you do there. So.
Oh, good. Okay, good. And who did you visit, if you don't mind my asking?
I remember the building.
I'm sorry, Chair Cruz. I won't do that again. Anyway, that's just a picture, a small picture of our family center, I should say.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Representative Cruz, committee members, I'm Susan Dillon. I'm assistant director for the Commission on Children and Families in Lake County. My office is in the north end of the county, and I'm the only full-time staff person they have. So I'm proud of that, and that my county cares about not only our children and families, but my little corner of the world. It's just to let you know, with our center, we serve approximately 2,500 to 3,000 people in a 4,000 square mile area. If our center were to go away, exactly like Diana said, people would have to drive 100 miles for a lot of those services. And I'm especially proud of our site also, just because of, you know, condition risk factors in our county, different kinds of conditions, poverty level. Our center is involved 0 to 99, again, with the Head Start program across the street. Thanks to Diana's direction with the board and also with the community partners, she's involved with the Economic Development Board of the county. She works with the Lake County Senior Citizens, bringing transportation and services to the North End. As an example, they have senior meals, what, 3-4 days?
2 days a month in North
Lake. In North Lake, and 3 or 4 days a week in Lakeview. So it's a kind of a constant struggle for us there. Diana's also working with a countywide group that is hoping to receive a grant. Well, we're applying for a grant from the Ford Family Foundation for Parenting. And again, another kudo to the Wellness Center as far as a countywide project. They've chosen her site as the fiscal agent. So it's not only becoming a hub of our community, but it's actually a respected and noticed entity in our entire county. It's been very important to us, and thank you for the time to be here.
Thank you for coming.
I'll take 30 seconds. I'm Kathleen Hines. I'm with the Lane County. I'm staff with the Lane County Commission on Children and Families. Representative Cruz and members of the committee, I'm pleased to be able to be here and talk with you today. The Lane County Commission on Children and Families established family resource centers as a priority about 6 years ago, established 10 family resource center regions that have in partnership with the local school district. About 2 years ago, we strengthened our partnership with the Lane Educational Service District and with the Rural Consortium, successfully applied for 21st Century grant funding. Several of our other local regions and school districts have applied for them too, and so we have a number, about 12 or 13 partnerships that are combination family resource centers and 21st Century learning centers, which have been very successful. These centers are particularly critical in rural areas, but they also, because they serve as a hub, as you've heard, for services and linkages with other more urban-based programs. They represent a successful partnership with school districts, local providers. In Lane County in particular, we've been able to build exponentially the community safety net in partnership with family resource centers and Healthy Start. The Healthy Start parenting programs, many of them are happening and the weight clinic in the family resource centers. It's a way to get families in there early. The community safety net, which is community-based child abuse prevention for families that don't meet the threshold for intervention by services to children and families, would not be able to operate in rural areas effectively if they didn't have family resource centers. So we continue to support this concept and urge your support for House Bill 2082 and support local communities in their decisions to allocate funds to these very important centers. Thank you.
I want to thank everybody for coming. I also want to thank Representatives Carlson and Hansen for bringing us House Bill 2082 in and allowing us to make it a committee bill. And I also want to say that we are being attacked in the press right now by the governor because we're questioning his children's agenda. So personally, I have to question any budget that cuts this sort of funding out. With that, we are adjourned.